It's the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson.
Now, while this is all going on, I went through President Trump's speech and Chuck and Nancy's rebuttal.
The most important story.
The American people finally said enough, and that is why they elected Donald Trump.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Britain's version of Medicare for All is struggling with long waits for care.
And opinions and ideas that prepare you to tackle the day ahead.
Because ideas matter.
It's the AmeriChicks, dissecting issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. Agree or disagree, let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation. Welcome to the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson. We are having a conversation about those important events, important issues out there that affect you and your families. Thank you so much for listening. We are going to talk about some very important local things that are going on here in Colorado. We'll go through some headlines, though, first in this first segment. Second segment, Joshua Scharf has written a very important piece in Complete Colorado regarding PERA, the Public Employees Retirement Association. It's their retirement plan. And it's titled, PERA's Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Year. And so you'll want to find out about that in the second segment. Third and fourth segment, Mike Shelton, who is a Broomfield City Councilman, again, has written a very important piece that is in Complete Colorado. And he says, tax rebates to corporations are unfair, unhealthy, and unnecessary. So once again, this is going to be a very important conversation. It will arm you to be able to have reasonable conversations with your friends, your family, and your colleagues about these very important issues that affect each and every one of us. And just a reminder, you know, there's this narrative that is romancing socialism out there. Socialism, there is nothing social about socialism. Socialism is force. And we remember, and actually somebody, Steve, mentioned last night, you know, we've been talking about freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And they said, Kim, I think you should change that middle word there. It should be freedom, not force. So freedom instead of force. So I'm going to work on that. Depends. Some mornings I may say freedom versus force, force versus freedom, but it's freedom, not force. And studies show that Americans still like freedom. So it's never compassionate to take other people's rights, property, or freedom via force, whether with a weapon policy or unpredictable and excessive taxation. We're going to jump right into our inspiration for today. And today we're talking about local government and government. And so I went to Maggie Thatcher. She was Prime Minister of Britain, and she said, disciplining yourself to do what you know is right and important, although difficult, is the high road to pride, self-esteem, and personal satisfaction. Again, disciplining yourself to do what you know is right and important, although it's difficult, is the high road to pride, self-esteem, and personal satisfaction. And that is Maggie Thatcher. And I do want to say thank you to the great team that we have working on this show, and that is producer Steve. Thank you so much. Zach, Patty, Keith, greatly appreciate all of you. And as I was parking the car this morning, I was thinking about each of you listeners out there. Each of you has your own personal story. Each of you are treasured and valued. And as you walk your journey today, just know that you are treasured and valued, and that that each of us are individuals, and we are all out there doing our best with our own individual stories. And I wish you all a very good day. I know that there's challenges out there. There's great things and there's challenges, and you walk through those every day and do your very best. So thank you to each of you listeners out there. The joke I ran this by Steve yesterday, and local government. I thought this was kind of funny. Are you ready, Steve?
Go for it.
Okay. So, local government humor. This is where I found this. Bob, at age 70, was a wealthy widower and the oldest member of the local town council. Though his wife had passed on several years prior, Bob continued to make their annual trip to Florida each year. This year, when Bob returned from Florida, he showed up with a breathtakingly beautiful 25-year-old woman. The woman was stunning with her charm, her figure, her gorgeous tan, and absolute sex appeal. And wherever they went, she hung on Bob's arm and listened intently to every word that he spoke. A few days after returning from Florida, Bob brought her to the town council meeting, and his colleagues were incredulous. One asked, Bob, how did you find such a beautiful young girlfriend? And Bob replied, she's not my girlfriend, she's my wife. His colleagues were dumbfounded. So one immediately asked Bob, how did you ever persuade a woman that young and gorgeous to marry you? And Bob replied, well, I lied about my age. And his friend said, what? You told her you were 50? And Bob smiled and said, no, I told her I was 90. Okay, on that note, we're going to jump into headlines. First thing, I wanted to make sure this, we have so many headlines and so much to tell you, and I hadn't gotten to this yet. But many of you probably know Tom Steyer out in California. He is a billionaire. He has announced that he is running for president. He is a climate activist. Let's put it this way. And in a video that was released on Tuesday morning, Steyer said, if you think that there's something absolutely critical, try as hard as you can and let the chips fall where they may. And that is exactly what I'm doing. My name is Tom Steyer, and I'm running for president. Steyer has operated as a funding force in Democrat politics in recent years, bankrolling candidates and organizations that promote liberal causes, including the impeachment of President Donald Trump. Steyer's net worth reached $1.6 billion this year, according to Forbes, a fortune that he began amassing in 1996 when he launched his hedge fund, Farallon Capital. In the 2018 House races, Steyer spent over $100 million on and marked the third consecutive election cycle in which he spent millions supporting Democrat candidates. But it's Steyer's efforts to impeach Trump which have made him the most visible, starring in a self-funded television commercials in which he calls on Congress to remove the president from office. Steyer's late entry to the race makes it highly unlikely that he will qualify for the second round of Democrat debates hosted by CNN, which is set for the end of this month. To make the stage in under 3 weeks, he'll need to receive campaign contributions from 65,000 individuals and receive 1% support in at least three DNC-approved polls. And Steyer will face immediate resistance by the already crowded Democrat field. The New York Times reported that Steyer has pledged to spend $100 million on his bid, putting him directly at odds with Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, who has sworn off private, high-dollar fundraising events during her primary campaign and vocally criticized the political influences of billionaires and corporations. I think it's important that you understand that Tom Steyer actually made his fortune in fossil fuels. And so it's just astounding to me that now he wants to put in policies that make fossil fuels, which fossil fuels are reliable, they are efficient, they're affordable. And those are three things that help everyday people thrive and prosper. So here's a guy who made his money on fossil fuels, and he's going to run for president, and he doesn't want everybody else to have the benefits of fossil fuels. He wants to make energy more and more expensive for everyday hardworking people. Any comments on that, Steve?
What's the definition of potpourri? A little bit of everything?
Yeah.
This is essentially what's happening on the in the Democratic world with the march forward to November of 2020.
Well, and I saw a funny meme recently, and it was a little meme, and it had all, you know, a whole bunch of Democrat candidates, and it had a moderator, and it says, which of you are for free? And you see everybody's hands raised, and he says, I haven't finished the question yet. And I thought that's very, very appropriate. Another thing on the national level that I think that we need to be really, really concerned about, and that is that Governor Cuomo in New York has signed a bill which will allow Congress to get President Trump's tax returns. Now, I know that people that dislike President Trump significantly think that this is a great idea. But you know what, everybody? You need to take a litmus test. If government can do this, this is against the law to pass a bill to get at somebody's personal tax returns. And if they can do that to President Trump, who's going to be next? And this is highly unconstitutional. It's really political maneuvering to go after a political opponent using the force of government. And if this is where we are in America right now, we need to be very, very concerned about that. And so, again, I find this very troubling, what's happening in New York. And maybe that's one of the reasons why people are moving out of New York, is because they are they're off their rocker on a number of different things.
Can we see Governor Cuomo's tax return?
Well, you know what? And speaking of that, somebody said, you know what? I would be more interested in seeing politicians' tax returns who have become millionaires than a billionaire businessman who has become a politician. Now, how is that, Steve? You know, let's just think about it. These people go to Congress, you know, and they're paid a good salary. But how is it that they go in and just make this certain amount of money and they come out millionaires? How does that happen?
Well, and we wonder why, you know, the march towards term limits is getting, you know, that drumbeat is getting louder and louder because people are getting kind of tired of this because it's the obvious draw. I'm going to go to Washington and I'm going to make a ton of money.
And that was never the way that it was supposed to be. And one of the reasons that I submit to you that that is happening is because we have been moving away from representative government to administrative government. And so people get embedded. You have your politicians and your bureaucrats, your interested parties, and they're all continually working together to keep their power. And there's money involved in that. And so I know that that is why we're talking, many people are talking about term limits. Ideally, I'd like term limits to happen at the ballot box, but that doesn't necessarily happen all the time.
Most notably, though, Ted Cruz seems to be leading the way in some of his efforts very recently.
Well, and I think that that may be what we're going to need to do. One other quick headline, and then we're going to go to break here in just a minute. We're going to be back with Joshua Scharf. But Kamala Harris, who is running for president, she has launched a plan for $100 billion to help black families with home ownership. And this is what she said. Now, bear in mind, she is a woman of color, and she is a very powerful U.S. senator. We recently had a black president. And so, you know, people are getting to the very top of the different professions. And I would like it to be because of the content of their character and because of the merit of the work that they do. And what Kamala Harris is proposing here, she's out in California, and California is increasingly becoming a have and have not state. There's the rich and there's the poor, and then they say that they want to fix problems. They are squeezing the middle class. And now she is defining just because of the color of your skin that you would get money for your house versus somebody else. I actually think that that is very racist, and I think that we need to call her on that. But we're going to go to break here. When we come back, we'll be talking with Joshua Scharf. And we've been on the All-Star break for baseball. Baseball starts up again. We'll see the Rockies play the Cincinnati Reds. They're going to be coming to town. And Hooters Restaurants is the place to watch all the games. You can enjoy Hooters' beach-worthy seafood items. They have fish tacos, snow crab legs, mouth-watering buffalo shrimp. And again, Steve, last night the girls came over, and I ordered that mouth-watering buffalo shrimp, and I didn't get one.
I don't know. I guess, do I have to come over there, I guess, and direct traffic or something like that?
I think you're going to have to. But it obviously, they are delicious. So the other great thing is if you're out for lunch, they have 9 items for $9, 11 to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday. They got fabulous, delicious menu items there. So if you want more information on any of this, go to HootersColorado.com. That's HootersColorado.com. Let them know that you know the Americhicks. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Joshua Scharf regarding his very important piece in Complete Colorado, Para's terrible, horrible, no good, very bad year. We'll be right back.
All Americhicks sponsors are an exclusive partnership with the Americhicks and are not affiliated or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Americhicks with Kim Munson and grow your business, contact Kim at Americhicks.com. That's Americhicks.com.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For over 30 years, entrepreneur, stylist, and Americhick Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game and freshen your look, email Kim at Americhicks.com for your initial style consult. Kim at Americhicks.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Americhicks with Kim Munson, where we dissect issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left, agree or disagree. Let's have a conversation, and I'm thrilled to have on the line with me Joshua Scharf. He's a numbers guy, and he had a very important piece in Complete Colorado. It was July 2nd. It's Para's Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Year. Joshua Scharf, welcome to the AmeriChicks.
Good morning, Kim. How are you?
Well, I am good, but should I be good? I'm looking at this piece that you did, and what has happened over at PARA, the Public Employee Retirement Association. That's the retirement plan for public employees. What's going on over there?
Last year, PARA saw a return on its investment of minus 3.5%, and that has had some effects on where we sit on, where we sit on in terms of balances, what kinds of things have to kick in that will hopefully help keep the program from getting into continued bad shape, and then of course it also it raises some potential yellow flags given what we may be, at some point. None of us likes to think about this, but at some point, we're going to be heading into a cyclical recession of some kind. The market will reflect that. And then where will we be, where will we be once the market begins to reflect that as well? PARA has a fairly diverse portfolio, but one of the things that we've been claiming for a while is that for the returns that they get, they've taken on too much volatility. They've taken on too much risk, which manifests itself in volatility.
Mm-hmm.
And this appears to be some evidence of that. That they if you look at other pension funds around the country, large and small, that make similar returns, PARA's volatility is among the highest. And this is the kind of thing that happens when you invest the way they invested.
Well, and they're doing that because if I remember right, when I was on city council, they were assuming, I think, an 8% annual rate of return. I think that they have brought that down just a little bit. But assuming that rate of return when in actuality they were down 0.3%, that's a big problem from what I can see.
Well, it was worse than 0.3%. It was actually 3.5% they were down.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and so what that meant is that they went from having a net position, what used to be called net assets, but now in pension fund terminology is called net position, of a little over $53 billion to a little under $50 billion, right around $49 billion, which means that they were down, because of that, they were down 7.5% in their net position. Now, how is that possible that you have, that you lose 3.5%, you're down 7.5% in your net position? The reason for that is that they're underfunded to begin with. So the money that they make on their investments has to do two things. With a well-funded pension program, it only does one thing. It makes up the deal. It helps pay benefits. And so you take in a certain amount, pay out a certain amount in benefits. You want your money on your investments to make up that difference. So you're not doing, in essence, a pay-as-you-go. The whole point of having a pension fund is that the investments will help pay off these obligations. When PARA is underfunded, that investment return has additionally the job of trying to make up the difference, trying to get from being about 60% funded to ideally about 100% funded, and so bad years hurt more than good years help, and that's the kind of thing that you're seeing here, where they go from being about a little over 60%, maybe 63% funded, to being now back under 60% funded, meaning that for by their own calculation, assuming a 7.25% rate of return every year, they have enough money on hand to cover 60 cents worth of every dollar's worth of promises that have been made.
Okay, so let's talk about these promises. These are promises we have people that have retired that are depending on, what has been promised to them. I would submit to you that compared to people in the private sector, it's a pretty lucrative in many ways, but they've been promised that. And then you've got these young, hardworking teachers that are coming in. They're actually putting more into this. They're being promised that they're going to get X down the road. I don't know. I'm really concerned about it because people are depending on these promises. At some point in time, what's going to happen?
Well, what's liable to happen is what you see happening to current retirees, which is part of part of a plan that was put in place in 2018 to help PARA get out of this problem. One of the things that they did is that should PARA fall behind its funding, they put in what they believed was a glide path to getting to being fully funded in 30 years. Again, you know, volatility generally puts a wrench in those things, but on the assumption that you have these nice smooth returns, that I still think are a little aggressive, by the way. I mean, 7.25% is still higher than most sort of independent examiners of the market say that over long term you probably expect about 6.5%, which is about what they've gotten since 2000.
Which
so I think
that seems
still over that, but look.
Well, and that seems reasonable to bring that down even further. But they're making this assumption that they're going to have 7.25% return year over year. Is that what you're saying to us?
That's what. Yes, exactly. And even if they do that, if they do that, then they would be fully funded in about 30 years or so. So given all of that, if they fall behind the funding schedule, there are some things that happen. Employees contribute more, employers contribute more. It becomes a line item in the state budget, which is in essence a taxpayer bailout of PARA. And unfortunately, what happens is the cost of living adjustments, which is one of the few things that one of the few existing benefits that a court will let a pension plan adjust, the cost of living adjustments get cut, which means you now have seniors who are already retired. This is for existing retirees who are already retired, have already made all their investment decisions. They've already made all their financial decisions for their lives. They're living in an area, many of them, living in the Denver area, where rents are increasing, obviously, far above inflation. And they're going to see their cost of living adjustments cut. So, you know, that's what will end up happening to employees down the line is that, you know, sooner or later, they're simply not going to be able to see the benefits that they've been promised. Either that, or they're going to have to raise taxes to the point where as in other states, people will begin fleeing that kind of a tax burden.
Oh, and then that just is like a snowball once it gets rolling because of high taxes and this kind of, I don't know, would you say there's mismanagement or is it just market volatility? What do you think's going on over there at PARA?
Oh well, in terms of the rate of return, I don't think it's mismanaged in the sense that I think that they're doing a poor job picking investments. They were about in the middle. So pension. There are two things to bear in mind here. Number one is some of this was an artifact of when they report. Their fiscal year closes at the end of the calendar year. Other plans, I went and I looked at a large database that Boston College keeps of these things, and other plans that report at the end of the year. You know, came in somewhere between nearly 0% loss and maybe a 6% loss. So PARA was about in the middle of that. So remember, part of this was an artifact of stocks doing poorly in the fourth quarter, and so PARA reports in the fourth quarter. Since then, stocks have recovered somewhat, and that will be no doubt what PARA argues. The problem is they don't actually report investments except at the end of the year. They don't really have that information of how they've done in the interim. They don't give quarterly reports on their investments like some pension funds do. They only give the annual reports. So the only real information we have is what they had at the end of the year.
Okay.
And we need to bear that in mind. That they sort of don't get to claim credit for a rebound unless they're willing to actually, you know, go to the mat and put that on paper and say, here's where we are.
Got it.
So I don't think they're mismanaged in terms of investments. I think given the rate of return that their investment people have been asked to achieve, I think they have therefore taken on risk that is detrimental to the long-term health of the fund.
Okay. Well, hey, Joshua Sharf, we're out of time on this, but go to Complete Colorado. Very important piece. Your pieces are always so well-researched and so thoughtful. So again, this is Joshua Sharf. His piece at Complete Colorado is PARA's terrible, horrible, no good, very bad year. Thanks so much, Joshua, and we will talk to you soon.
Thank you, Kim.
Okay, and we've got Jason McBride on the line. Hey, Jason, any quick comments on PARA?
Well, I think Joshua covered it pretty well, and it's hard to make quick comments on it because it's such a twisted mess, so I'll hold off until I'd have time to make a little bit more comment.
Okay, sounds good. Now, hey, one other thing. You know, we are coming in. I just mentioned that Tom Steyer has put his hat in the ring for president. What happens in the market in pre-election years?
Well, I was just about to say it's maybe Para will have a better year this year, because pre-election years are by far the best performing years for the market. This year so far is bearing that out, with the markets up approximately 20%, depending on which one you look at. Now we're only halfway through the year, so there's still a lot of time for that to get better or get worse. But yeah, by far the pre-election year has outperformed all other of the 4 year cycle for many, many years, Kim. And in fact, we've only had one losing year in the markets in the last 80 years in a pre-election year, and that was in 2015.
Wow. And so it's a good year for people to sit down with you and your colleagues over at Presidential Wealth Management and have you take a look at their nest egg. And if they want to do that, check out chickspresidential.com. That's chickspresidential.com. And I know, Jason, you and your colleagues will sit down with folks and help them out on their nest egg.
You bet. Absolutely. Like you always say, Kim, it's about your personal economy. And come on over and let's get personal.
You got it. We'll be right back with Mike Shelton.
Are you looking for news, not propaganda? Ready for a news source you can actually trust? How about a news site that doesn't want to sell you a subscription? Visit CompleteColorado.com to see all the latest news from around Colorado. Complete Colorado's staff scours news sources from around the state and nation to bring you only the top stories that affect you right here in our great state. Updated three times a day, CompleteColorado.com has full-time reporters doing original investigations and reporting like newspapers used to do, as well as opinion and political commentary from a variety of Colorado voices. And CompleteColorado.com is the only place to read columnist Mike Rosen. Always fresh content, always free, always informed. CompleteColorado.com, your complete source for Colorado news.
Don't miss Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Join Kim Munson with the Americhicks at Water's Edge Winery in Centennial or Colorado Cork and Keg in Castle Rock. And now introducing Vino and Veritas in Fort Collins at Ginger and Baker. Kim Munson with the Americhicks would like to thank Presidential Wealth Management Loveland for sponsoring the new Vino and Veritas in Fort Collins. In Denver and Castle Rock, Kim would like to thank Presidential Wealth Management Denver and YourTownTaxpayers.com for their generous support. Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Sign up today at Americhicks.com.
Social media is important to the Americhicks, since it's an avenue we can utilize to hear from and speak to all of our friends. For those of you who enjoy listening to the show, we'd love to hear what's on your radar. Follow us and talk to us at Americhicks Twitter and Facebook pages. Also, if you're a business owner who could benefit from some extra foot traffic from like-minded friends, consider advertising on the Americhicks radio show. Contact us at Americhicks.com or email Kim at Americhicks.com.
Welcome back to the Americhicks with Kim Munson, where we dissect issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. Agree or disagree, let's have a conversation. I am thrilled to have a conversation today with Mike Shelton, who is a city councilman in Broomfield. Mike Shelton, welcome to the Americhicks.
Thank you so much, Kim. Happy to be here.
Well, you have been a city councilman for about as long as I've known you. So tell us a little bit about Broomfield City Council.
Yeah, it's a 10-member board. We have five wards and two representatives per ward. They have staggered four-year terms, and we're term-limited, just like most cities, at two four-year terms. So I was elected in 2011, and I'm term-limited this November.
Do you have other things in mind regarding politics by any chance?
I don't know. You ask me tomorrow and the answer will be totally different, you know.
That's probably true. That's probably true. So, well, Mike, thank you so much for joining me, because you have written a very succinct, very important piece for the Complete Colorado. And it's the title is Tax Rebates to Corporations Are Unfair, Unhealthy, and Unnecessary. This is a fascinating piece. You said that Broomfield recently passed a tax incentive deal with Crocs, which, you know, is the shoes. They were formerly a NIWAT, And so they've moved to Broomfield, and they have received a 50% rebate on business personal property tax each year for 10 years. So that's kind of setting up how you started on this this important piece in Complete Colorado. Take it from there.
Yeah, thanks for picking up on that. You know, full disclosure, I was raised in the Niwot area, so I'm familiar with that business park where Crocs has been thriving. So this one kind of hit close to home and kind of raised my eyebrows more significantly than the others. And I guess the other thing to say is that Broomfield is hardly the worst at all of these. There's plenty of governments around Colorado and probably around the nation that do much worse things, like just give money straight up to people.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? They do this under the guise of economic development. And many of these cities and counties and states, they all have paid government bureaucrats that are with these economic development offices in many cases. And basically, they're kind of picking winners and losers. But I just wanted to make that point.
Yeah, that is their job. If you have an economic development department at your city or the state, then this is part of their job, is to go look for companies and recruit them. And a lot of some part of those deals is a tax rebate or some other kind of incentive. So what mainly concerns me is the unintended consequences that come from those kinds of deals, which are really hard to see. And if you really do think about them, then they may be worse than actually doing nothing. So that's kind of what I wanted to evoke in that piece and kind of run through those things.
Well, let's do that, because the argument for economic development is that it brings in commerce, it brings in jobs, it brings in people. But as you mentioned, there are unintended consequences. So let's go through that, Mike Shelton, Broomfield City Councilman.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So the first thing to realize is that these are tax incentives for new companies, either a company that's starting up, but there's an exception in the state statute that even if you're not a new company, if your investment is big enough, then you can also take advantage of the tax incentive. So what that means is that the largest corporations are in a better position to take advantage of those deals, and they're being better served by those tax incentive deals. The smaller companies aren't able to take advantage of those, or maybe not even be knowledgeable about this, because let's be honest, most people would just be appalled that their government can actually rebate taxes like this. Like, we all want rebates. Why are they giving it just away to select people? I think that's something that bothers people. So they don't know this is going on. And another thing I think that we see a lot of, I hear a lot of people saying that we want mom and pop shops. We want mm-hmm. small grocers. We want local restaurants, you know, people that live here and work here. But if we start doing, when we do all of these incentive programs, we're really just incentivizing the big guys, and they're competing against those small guys. And so we're kind of shooting ourselves in the foot with these incentives. That's one of those big consequences.
Well, and you know, you think about it. First of all, you make an important point that, the big guys, they get a refund on some of their taxes or a special deal, and your little company over here, your little mom and pop operation, you know, they're probably the ones that are helping to sponsor the local little baseball team. And, you know, they're part of the community. And it defies reason, and because I also served on city council, it defies reason why you would give, you know, this big business coming in a special deal and not the mom and pop. And so the big picture, and I think that you hit this in your piece, is that if, in fact, you know, lower taxes are better, lower regulations are better for the big company, well, maybe they're good for the mom and pop. Maybe lower regulations and lower taxes are good for the mom and pop group as well.
Yes. Yeah. And that's why this kind of false dichotomy that the city staff will always present is so bothersome, because there are so many natural organic ways to attract a business and individuals to come to your city. That's with good street maintenance. It's with, you know, ease of doing business. It's with, like you said, low taxes. you know, competent government that serves its people really well and provides, you know, good parks and recreation, and the schools are good. So these are all things that naturally attract business and individuals. So I wonder why we would focus on those incentives in the first place. It doesn't seem to be all that necessary. It seems like such a small little amount, and it really is. This tax incentive, for instance, for Crocs amounts to, I think it's about $75,000. It's a $1 billion company, so you can't make the argument that the incentive is the reason that they're coming here. You know, they picked Broomfield for other reasons, and that tax incentive is just the icing on the cake, I suppose, but it's pretty offensive to all the other businesses that have been operating here while they're paying full freight.
Well, and that's important to note. But another thing, you mentioned that you grew up in Niwot, and this is where Crocs had their business, and they've been thriving there. But there's, I think, an unintended consequence about what happens to the community where that business has been. What do you what's your comments about that, Mike Shelton?
Yeah, it also bothers me that we seem to have cities engaging in sort of a bidding war for companies. And so the offers keep on increasing in size, and maybe companies are playing cities off of each other. Amazon is the classic example, although that's obviously a little bit anomalous. But the same idea holds true. The cities really do compete over bringing these companies, and they offer competing incentive packages. As that bid price gets higher, that alone is troublesome. But then I also wonder what's going to happen to the communities where those businesses come from. So, you know, a lot of businesses will look for a new headquarters or something like that. And if they can't make it work, they may not move. But if they find a lucrative incentive package, then they may. And so what one city government ends up doing is using its citizens' tax money to lure a company in, and that community from where the business came ends up losing. So if that was a major employer, the problem could be multiplied. If it's a retailer, then maybe that market in the surrounding businesses also suffers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Kind of a domino effect there. And my argument is just, we don't need to be messing with that stuff.
It's not the proper role of government.
Why public money is it? Right.
Right. That is not really the proper role of government. And the other thing, and you started to highlight this in your piece, and so let's just kind of open that up. We're going to go to break then in a few minutes. But there is pressure that is put on a community regarding roads and sewer and schools that I don't think a lot of people think about. And that's another one of those unintended consequences that you talk about in this very important piece that you did. Tax rebates to corporations are unfair, unhealthy, and unnecessary. So talk a little bit more about these unintended consequences.
Yeah, and there's even another one that I realized just shortly after publishing this, and that's impacts to the environment. So the logic would go, if we're incentivizing a new business to come in here, and a lot of times these are high-paying jobs, too, because another thing that the city wants to do is attract people that are of means. That's one of the goals. And we try to attract good-paying jobs, too. There's a big movement to not pay real low wages. We want people well-paid. So these well-paid individuals come into the community and they have to live somewhere and they have to shop somewhere. So they'll be bidding on the housing stock, same as everybody else. And we can assume that the prices would be bid up. And we already have a housing cost issue. The affordability of housing is pretty much none.
Mm-hmm.
I said in the article that houses are priced like Dutch tulips right now. In other words, just really high. Everybody's a fan of moving to Colorado. We have very low property taxes compared to all the other states. I think we're 10th lowest. And so it's a good place to come. So even businesses coming from out of state relocating here, they've got to buy those homes. They've got to put their kids in schools. And they've got to go use the roads and shop and use all the other services. And that increases the pressure on all of those, especially, I think, in housing. And so the argument, again, is why contribute to the problem?
Well, and you think about it, Mike Shelton, and we're going to go to break in just a few seconds here. But so this big company gets a break. They get to basically, they're going to be able to keep more money in their pocket. So in essence, they might be able to pay, you know, a higher wage. Well, then once again, also in the labor market, that means mom and pop people over here, in order to try to keep up with trying to pay higher wages, that, it puts them at a disadvantage. And then you mentioned housing, you know, mom and pop and their employees need to have a place to live. But again, since this big company is getting breaks, they're able to pay their people more, which puts upward pressure on those costs, which again hurts our little businesses. So let's go to break and continue with this very important conversation. I'm talking with Mike Shelton. He has served on Broomfield City Council for 8 years. He's term limited. He's written this very important piece that was in Complete Colorado. It's called Tax Rebates to Corporations Are Unfair, Unhealthy, and Unnecessary. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect your private property rights. Karen Levine believes in home ownership. Since losing her mother to breast cancer, Karen Levine has helped to organize a local fundraising event called Karen's for the Cure, raising money for breast cancer research. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by the AmeriChicks with Kim Munson, so call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Come join the 88 Drive-In for all your favorite blockbuster movies. We're open 7 days a week. Admission is only $9 per person, and children under 12 are free. Friday, July 5th through Thursday, July 11th, features will include Toy Story 4, Godzilla, and Aladdin. And remember our popular Monday through Thursday pizza special? Get one 12-inch pizza served fresh and hot from our oven and two tall, cool 16-ounce sodas, all for only $12. Plus, now you can top it all off with our new sweet, crunchy churros and a steaming cup of hot chocolate. For more information, go to our Facebook page or visit our website at 88drivein.net.
You get more out of life when you go out to a movie.
Welcome back to the AmeriChicks with Kim Munson, where we dissect issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. Agree or disagree, let's have a conversation. Having a very important conversation with Mike Shelton. He has served on Broomfield City Council for 8 years. He's term limited out this November. He's written this really, really important piece. Tax rebates to corporations are unfair, unhealthy, and unnecessary. And Mike, you've really hit on it, but there's so many things that happen under the guise of economic development. And for some reason, many cities, counties, and even our state thinks that we need to have that be a government incentivized program, when in essence, if government got out of the way, economic development, I would submit to you, happens organically. But let's talk a little bit more. We're going through the unintended consequences of economic development. The politicians and pundits and interested parties say, hey, this is going to bring in commerce, it's going to bring in jobs, it's going to help keep our housing values up. But there's unintended consequences. We kind of hit on that. Why don't you make sure that our listeners understand exactly what you're concerned about?
Yeah, so the proponents of these incentive packages will say that they're good because the community will have more jobs and they will go around and they will shop at the stores and it'll just be great to have more people. But there's a whole lot of drawbacks to that also. And you mentioned just before the break that there's competition for employees too. And if you bring in a new company that pays really well, then the other businesses around them might start having to pay a higher wage to attract the employees to replace them. And
people will opine, oh, that's what we need to do because we're trying to you know, get higher wages for people. What they don't understand is that you are artificially allowing this big business to have more money in their pocket that they can pay people because they're paying less of their share in taxes. And this little company over here, that many people say, hey, this is great, we're increasing wages here. Labor costs get so high at some point that people will either go out of business or they will move someplace else.
Right. That's the thing, is that the smaller shops especially are operating on such small margins that these little effects have much larger effects. So sure, while that business is still alive, they might be paying a dollar more. But if they only survive a year, then what good is that?
Good point.
That's a great question. So it's something to pay attention to. And another part is the environmental impacts. If we're going to incentivize new companies to move here, and a lot of times these deals are done in vacant land, and a new company will come in and build a new building on a vacant piece of property. And if you care about the environment and you don't want to see government promoting this new development, then I think you should be concerned about these tax incentive deals too, because it makes it easier for that new company to come in, and they're bringing a lot of concrete, they're pouring a lot of asphalt, they're cutting down trees. You know, there are a whole lot of impacts. They're running air conditioners, and yeah, they're bringing in a whole lot of people too to go onto the roads.
Okay, fascinating. Now, that brings up a question, because I'm a property rights girl. You know, I really think that, you know, people in a responsible manner, you know, but, you know, you have your property, you should be able to do with it what you want. So say if I have a piece of vacant land and with no tax incentives, just organically, I take a look at it and I think I can develop this property. I can, you know, make a profit perhaps, or I can start to create wealth. How do you feel about just people organically being able to do that? Because that, you know, that will incur concrete and different things like that. So what would your comment be to people on that, Mike Shelton?
I'm all for those developments that are done, you know, voluntarily. It's when somebody wants to give up their vacant piece of property and host homes, then, you know, I'm fine with that. I don't want to get in that way. A lot of city plans do try to get in their way, mm-hmm. and zone it for things that the city wants. And in a strange way, there's reasons for that. If you want to look into the Gallagher Amendment and figure out why cities want so badly to bring in commercial and retail, is because they pay almost five times the amount of property tax as residential. So cities are, you know, they're really competing hard for businesses, because that's how a city is going to survive.
You know, and that
can't survive without it.
That is so interesting that you brought up the Gallagher Amendment, because there is kind of a movement out there that they are kind of talking that, oh, there's a big problem with the Gallagher Amendment because there is this disparity that you just mentioned regarding that commercial property is taxed much higher at a much higher rate than residential property. But many of the people that want to say, quote unquote, fix Gallagher are not thinking about, hey, we'd like to lower those taxes on businesses, on commercial properties, and bring that down. I think what they're thinking is, we need to figure out a way to increase the taxes on residential. And so I just wanted to make that note. We have not talked a lot about Gallagher yet. We've talked a lot about Tabor, the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights. But I think it's important to understand, when people say they want to fix Gallagher, in essence, instead of lowering the taxes on commercial properties, they're thinking, hey, how can we increase the property and the taxes on residential? So I know that's a side note, but I want people to understand that, because we need to go through that.
Some people certainly do. I know one of the components of the Gallagher working groups, one of the questions they were exploring was whether we can go away from the state set rate and let counties or cities or whatever decide their own rates. And so what you might see is that, you know, like what we say is that if you lower the taxes, then you will see more commerce and the economy will improve. So, you know, if cities and counties were able to set those rates, I think actually what you would see is a lot of cities and counties starting to reduce their retail property, commercial property tax rates, the non-residential property tax rates. And yeah, of course, you will see people also saying that we need to raise the residential rates. And I would just remind everybody again that we're 10th lowest. So, you know, I wouldn't be in favor of doing that. But what Gallagher has done has forced the residential assessment rate to go lower and lower and lower and lower. And ordinarily, you know, you wouldn't do that. Or if you did it, you would do it in a more balanced way so that the non-commercial, non-residential sector isn't carrying 4 or 5 times the burden. Well, you kind of want that a little bit more balanced, but
yeah,
off topic maybe.
Well, yeah, but if
it
you
is a large conversation.
It is a large conversation, but if you lower taxes, you know, with the Laffer curve, if you lower taxes and there's more commerce, the tax receipts actually, they go up because there's a bigger pot you're collecting taxes from. And one of the reasons that that pot gets bigger is because private enterprise goes out and they create products and services that people are willing to trade their hard-earned dollars for. And so a lot of, and Mike, I know you're on the firing line. There's so many politicians and pundits and bureaucrats and interested parties that don't understand that. And if you have high taxes, though, this is the other thing, then you can give people special deals. And there's politicians and right. bureaucrats that they kind of like that power. I've seen it anyway.
Yeah, that's why you really see no one pushing for charter amendments to prevent governments from doing this. And you never see state legislators trying to prohibit cities and counties from competing with public money. But interesting thing that I linked to in the article, my article, is some work that was, it's another article in Complete Colorado that points out that the Colorado Constitution does prohibit public money from being spent this way and given away as incentives. And it's basically a statement in defense of principles of fairness. So I think that's interesting. But of course, courts and the legislature have kind of withered that away and no one really pays attention to it anymore.
So that is in the Colorado Constitution, and the Gallagher Amendment is in the Constitution, as well as Tabor, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights. You know, Mike, we're just about out of time, and there's a whole nother conversation that I would like to talk with you about, and that is affordable housing. And I submit right. to you that affordable housing, homelessness, I've started to call them the industrial complexes, because once you get government involved in these things, you start to see prices go up, picking winners and losers. What's coming down the pike there in Broomfield? And then let's get you scheduled to come back and talk about affordable housing. But what do you see coming down the pike there?
Yeah, sure. There's a few different recommendations. One positive one actually is accessory dwelling units. So if you wanted to build onto the back of your home and host another family or person or your grandparent or a son or a daughter, you could do that. That is one way to provide or allow more housing to be built, and that's going to eventually bring prices down. Another approach to it is to require all new development to follow some kind of restriction that says you must set aside a certain percent of units as affordable.
Now that gets me crazy.
It's a little hard to swallow, especially when the same people that are supposedly so worried about the affordability of housing going out of control, they're the same people that vote for the incentive packages that bring big companies here with high paying salaries. So I think they're actually contributing to the problem there, and we could stop interfering and things wouldn't be as bad.
Well, I think that that is a very novel idea. So, Mike Shelton, we will get you scheduled to talk about affordable housing. I thank you so much for this very important piece that you've done. It's in Complete Colorado by Mike Shelton, city councilman in Broomfield, and it's tax rebates to corporations are unfair, unhealthy, and unnecessary. I would highly recommend that you read it. Mike Shelton, thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye now.
And our quote for today is from former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher. She says, at one end of the spectrum are the terrorist gangs within our borders and the terrorist states which finance and arm them. At the other are the hard left operating inside our system, conspiring to use union power and the apparatus of local government to break, defy, and subvert the law. So this is Kim Munson signing off. Today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them if I don't survive.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.